Oh my goodness, yoga podcast listeners, are you in for a special, special treat this episode? This is actually a beautiful conversation between two of the most lovely humans / dancers that I know, Miss Bianca Lily Starr of Bianca Lily Ballet, who you've all been introduced to multiple times on yoga podcasts, and Miss Brenda Rodriguez, who is known in the dance world as Lola Mambo Goddess. Okay, I made up the last part, but she is absolutely a goddess and she is a beautiful dancer. She dances at Bianca Lily Ballet, but she is also a beautiful performer. She performs mambo, she teaches mambo, she performs lots of other variations of jazz, contemporary, salsa, and I am so excited as these two beautiful ladies are going to have a deep, deep conversation, not only about dance, but women in dance, women of color in dance, and just all of the gems of knowledge that these two are going to share. I am not hosting this particular podcast episode. I wanted to share this with all of you. If you love dance, if you love just empowerment, if you love activating the solar plexus chakra, the sacral chakra, oh my goodness, the heart chakra, yes, all of them. And this is going to help you really just be inspired. I know I was. I hope you enjoy. Namaste.
What I'm really aware of is what it might feel like to be a woman who's not necessarily fitting a particular kind of stereotype, whether it's skin tone or hair texture, body type. And now as I get older, age, and really in a way defying a lot of what people want to do in terms of labels. That's really tough.
So welcome to our wonderful Patreon subscribers who support the studio and support me and all of our extracurricular activities around ballet. We're going to pick up with where we left off. And, Brenda and I have been having some discussions recently about there's a little bit of a phenomenon, and we're not sure, some of it could be something to do with the times we're living in, but also we were just discussing that it's cultural, and there seems to be certain forms of dance that attract a commitment from people to train, and other forms don't. And it's almost like people treat certain forms of dance as, well, they should be casual, or maybe they're unworthy of committed training. I'm not sure what it is, but it's interesting, this idea of it being a cultural thing. And do we think it's has to do with something happening in America at this time, American relationship to dance? I don't know. What are your thoughts with it being cultural?
Yeah, it's interesting because I came from Chicago, and I'm not trying to compare like Chicago to to Albuquerque, but people's relationship with dance probably has a lot to do with the population, the cultural influx and influence. So for instance, here, flamenco is very big, and I'm sure there's just like a whole historical connection to that. And there might be not other forms of dance not necessarily represented as much. It could be exposure to other dance forms. But one of the things that I recognize is that there's a disregard, and that might be a really strong word, but a disregard to what dance is all about. So it's like if you took ballet and you teach us ballet, and you always talk a little bit about the different schools of training and why some seconds are high, like your arm and
yeah,
is higher or lower, or why we might do a glissade a certain way or a tombé a certain way. Like these are right. Just certain forms of movement that change depending upon the time. You know, there's a historical progression.
There's certain stylistic things that are now outdated, but you can tie to perhaps the Ballet Russe period. There are certain styles that are tied geographically or culturally, the royal dance style versus Cecchetti versus the French style. Exactly. Yeah.
Or even the vocabulary. And so sometimes when I don't call myself a teacher of dance, but I hold practices of mambo. When I hold practices and I start talking about history, vocabulary, people are just like kind of not interested. And at one time, I was subbing for one class and I was introducing a form of dance, cha-cha-cha and boogaloo. And I started talking a little about the history of these dances to give people context. And it was kind of interesting because at the end, I refer to salsa onto as mambo. And someone says, oh, I didn't know onto is called mambo. And I'm thinking, that's the first thing. It's like 101. It's like, what is a plié?
Right.
It's a bend of the knee. You know, what are the positions? And I thought that that's what I meant, like, for social dance is kind of this casualness, like, let's just learn the steps.
Yes, I think, you know, I know so little about salsa and related forms of dance, but I do appreciate that there's as many schools and styles of ballet as we have. You have at least as many, if not more, in salsa. I know there's Cuban, styles. I know that's different from what they're doing in Colombia.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's like all kinds of variations. And that out of that variation, so if you're learning Afro-Cuban, a lot of the movement comes from prayer or orisha, as we call them. If you're learning mambo salsa too, New York style, that has a whole level roots in American jazz as well as Cuban music. And so if you don't know that, you can't connect to why music is playing a certain way. You know, it's like tango. There are different kinds of movement within tango, right? I'm not a tango aficionado, but fast.
Yes, exactly. We have in the context, so we have a dance event, a dance party would be called a milonga.
Yeah.
And then a milonga is structured in a certain way musically. And there's three types of tango. There's tango pieces played, but also valse, which, you know, the waltz-based related stuff, and then what's also called milonga, which is kind of tighter, faster, right? And exactly. And so there's different types there. And then, of course, you know, there's different approaches. Are you doing ballroom? Are you doing street style? You know, are you doing open called salon style, which is supposed to be a little more polite? You know, there's leave room between you and your partner versus milonguero style, where you're in close embrace. Exactly. And I think you're right. Maybe this lack of appreciation for how many forms of Latin dance there are, maybe that contributes something to why people are reticent to train more seriously. Maybe it's or it doesn't intimidate them, but there does seem to be a disconnect. And I do think it could also have something to do with maybe the problem is not, well, my friend John, he would say cultural appropriation.
Yeah, I was going to say that too, actually.
Yeah, which...
It's like the disregard of where things really came from.
Correct.
And you don't need to know.
Correct. And you know, Bianca's spicy opinion alert, like sometimes people fling around cultural appropriation in a way that I think is not constructive and it actually builds walls. Mm. And sometimes the people who scream the loudest about cultural appropriation are people who've never left this country and only speak one language. Mm-hmm. So I do think it gets used as a cudgel at inappropriate times, but their real authentic cultural appropriation is an issue. And I think there is, people aren't aware of the fact, you know, they just assume, you know, that, oh, well, that's just Latin dancing. And so they can't imagine, like, well, Latin America
is really diverse.
Very diverse.
Just like the United States.
Would you consider yourself to be, because you have Dominican roots, you consider yourself to be a Black Latina?
So I consider myself, in all honesty, I'm actually mixed because my mother happens to be Polish American. And the whole notion of when I was growing up, unfortunately, you had to pick. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in a Black and Puerto Rican community. So I aligned a lot. I was not Puerto Rican, but I aligned a lot with the African American community. But my father's not African American. Mm-hmm. And the experience that he experienced, even though he is dark skinned in Dominican Republic, is not the same. You can't claim that. You can't claim that. Also, the way that people view race and color in other parts of Latin America, I mean, there's that's probably a whole big conversation, is very different than kind of the bifurcated way that it's looked at in the United States.
Yes.
Thank goodness now you can consider yourself mixed in the true sense of the word. However, what I find is people label me based upon what they need. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I'm light. I don't mean unfortunately, but I have lighter skin. So people will, they tend to see me the way they need to see me. Mm-hmm. So, and depending upon your frame of reference, you will see whatever. So I can be Italian, Brazilian, African, like people will say Black, people will say Greek, Jewish. And then if I'm in the Middle East, it's Moroccan or the Egyptian. So it's very interesting. So to your point about traveling the world, I am very tied to my African roots as I am to my European roots. I can't disentangle.
Sure.
And it's not that easy to choose.
Oh, you shouldn't have to, right?
So, but what I want to, you know, so if you can imagine the both and, what I'm really aware of is what it might feel like to be a woman who's not necessarily fitting a particular kind of stereotype, whether it's skin tone or hair texture, body type. And now as I get older, age, and really in a way defying a lot of what people want to do in terms of labels. That's really tough. And I realize that we're a world full of labels, and we all need to kind of suspend that for a second and be surprised by what people have to offer. You can look at somebody, I mean, you don't know who they're married to or who they're partnered with. You have no idea, regardless of what you think you see in front of you. So all of us have to be pleasantly surprised, and pleasantly surprised at what we can kind of give ourselves, because we can get kind of confined by those labels. So it's a really, so when people ask me, I have a lot of sensitivity around how I know I'm identified. So with a person who has darker skin, I have a lot more privilege. A lot more privilege moving in this world, being seen differently, being more acceptable, because I blur the lines, mm-hmm. you know, and another person can be a Black, Latina, dark skinned and have like a whole different level of interaction. Right. So I'm very aware of that. I'm sure. Really aware, and kind of, I tread gently mm-hmm. about what that means. I also know where my cultural roots are. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily learn about rock and roll until I was in high school. I grew up in a really deep kind of R&B setting. I'm embarrassed to say that growing up where I did, sometimes the last thing I ever wanted my mother to do was pick me up at school, because I wanted people to see how I could fit in, not see that I had a mother who had blonde hair and blue eyes. And so there was a lot of pain on that other side. Mm. This was a different generation of sure. growing up, but either way, that need to be able to have community was really big.
Sure.
So this is why I say I kind of tread gently, and I tread with honor to what I happen to be. I didn't get to choose anything, neither does anybody else.
Right.
So when I work with other people, or I'm befriending other people, I say, we're just here. I just some simple grace.
Yeah.
Nobody gets to like direct.
Right.
You know, when I see I have a certain level of privilege around my health, I am really treading gently there too. In any moment that can change. But that's part of it is conscientiousness maybe. And part of it is just fortune.
Right.
And that can change. And other people don't ask for anything. They don't ask to be light skin, dark. We're here.
Yeah.
So how do we tread in a way that honors our humanity and honors structures that can oppress,
right?
You know, overtly or inadvertently. Mm-hmm. And that's with everybody, with gender, everything, if you think about it.
I have heard stories that there are places where social dance becomes an equalizer, and certainly places in the Caribbean, places like that. That's the place where people who maybe aren't supposed to or weren't supposed to engage or not seen as equals in other ways were able to kind of find each other on the dance floor. It sounds like you've seen some of that experience. I think we have the opposite experiences also, examples of that in the dance world. But is that something you noticed in specific places that you've traveled or lived?
Yeah, I mean, I think people will always say that they find a home, I'm most familiar with Latin dance, that no matter who you are, you can find it. And because of the diaspora, the Latin, like, you find people from Cuba and Mexico and South America, all over the world. There's a way that people can find themselves at home in the dance floor. I think where the world of dance has to work a little harder is suggesting that only certain people can do certain dances.
Sure.
And that's even in Latin. Like it is not unusual for a close, very great dancer to come up to me and say, I feel guilty that I happen to be a gringa, they'll use that term, or a white girl dancing Latin. And I say, to your point, and I'm going to appropriate this because you gave me something, Bianca, and you said, dance is our birthright.
Yeah.
It is drilled out of us.
Yeah.
And part of it drilled out is part of it is cultural, but because we don't have access to the certain music or certain cultural exposure. And that's not, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It is what it is. So you go to certain parts of the world, maybe Finland will be exposed to tango more than other places. But I can tell you, I've been other places in the world where I thought, oh, you're not going to find dance because there's Muslims here or, some Arab speaking country. No, you find a lot of dancing.
Right.
So luckily for us, the world is getting smaller. But what I want to say is dance belongs to everybody. Now, brown girls can do ballet. There's still this kind of push at as if you're born to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not born to do certain things. You're exposed at a very young age.
Great. And this is where, again, I'm going to get into dicey territory discussing this, but that's where sometimes the cultural appropriation debate gets really toxic.
Yeah.
Because I have seen perhaps let's say, for example, an Asian person who has gone with a great deal of humility and studied perhaps a Latin form of dance very deeply, honored it, learned the history, understands it, and then maybe you'll encounter someone who doesn't study, doesn't really know anything about it, but they were born with a Latin name.
Yeah.
And then they feel like, well, why should I be learning from this guy? He's or she or whoever. They're not part of this bloodline. But it's about approaching with honor and an openness to learn. And that's why, that's exactly the problem we had with ballet, that we're working on opening, and it's opening at a phenomenal rate. But that idea that, this is a white person's dance. No, we shouldn't, no one should think of it that way.
Yeah. I think it, your point that it's dicey, I think this is the tension that for a long time, there were groups of people who were introducing dance, whether it's women, if you're talking about women choreographers, if you're talking about forms of dance, so when we look at jazz, but we don't look at the roots of jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is, from the other side, regardless of what you look like if let's say you have studied, so someone will say, well, that's an Asian person teaching Afro-Cuban. You said something really earlier. You said maybe people haven't traveled because there's an Asian diaspora. You can go to Paraguay. Yes. You can go to Cuba. There's a big Chinese population.
Yes, there were a lot of people from India, actually, who were taken as slaves to the Caribbean.
So there's all this. This is why I said before the bifurcate, kind of how we are looked at. And please, this doesn't mean there's not racism other places of the world.
Sure.
It just shows up slightly differently because of the history.
Right.
So if you're if your view is from the United States, understand that that's limited because you're looking at it from this particular point of view.
Yes.
But there is a diaspora that has occurred around the world. The other thing, though, the tension, I think, exists where, and I'll give you an example that's not even close to dance, but like, let's say in the sciences, women have been scientists for a really long time, whether they've been acknowledged or not. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been in medicine and the hard sciences, and often their particular contributions are not necessarily brought forth.
Yeah.
And they're almost hidden. Or if they've worked with a male counterpart, the male will be uplifted.
There was a documentary I saw once on Einstein and his theory of relativity and about how the first versions of the paper that were published included the name of his then wife.
Yeah. So what happens, I think, is for some communities who don't get acknowledged because the historical roots or vocabulary or stories around movement don't get mentioned, all of a sudden, the person who's then, let's say, not representative, gets highlighted. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, why have we never been elevated? So kind of, I don't know if that makes sense,
yes.
But that kind of thing happens.
Yes.
So a lot of like we're seeing a lot of African-based movement, like a dance called Semba, Kizumba, Zouk. And all of a sudden you see people from Europe taking it on and moving it forward. And thank goodness they have the means to do it. But all of a sudden you don't see any like Angolans represented, mm-hmm. or people from the part of the world that really elevates that dance and that's part of that cultural foray being represented. And that's where it hurts. Or like you see people not necessarily mentioning the roots. Mm-hmm. So when I'm in class, I'm always talking about, I said, before we begin, you need to know where this is coming from so that you have a sense of why we're doing certain things.
Yeah.
Why Boogaloo looks slightly different than cha-cha-cha. There's a whole reason.
Right.
Or people asking me, you know, do we call it cha-cha or cha-cha-cha? And I said, well, technically, because it's a syncopated move, it's cha-cha-cha. And that's the original name.
Yeah.
Well, we shorten it, like dancers go cha, or, mm-hmm. you know, we do mm-hmm. some things, but...
Yeah.
There's a root to it.
Yes.
And to me that becomes really important, and to elevate mm-hmm. representatives of that, of the original form of dance without, but also acknowledging, do they have what it takes?
Right.
You just don't put a person who happens to be black and say, well, I'm sure you can do hip hop, right? Or
right.
house.
Right. Right.
And the same thing happened with house music. If people understand the history of house, this occurred during the times where, I mean, it was a period of time during gay liberation mm-hmm. where a lot of black and brown men didn't have a place to go for clubs.
Right.
And they really began an underground movement of house dancing.
Wow.
And the music is from New York, from Chicago. Those are the roots. And now it's all over. You can listen to house from Europe. Excellent. But when people kind of look back at the roots of it, no one discusses that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And you can look. So the good news is you can look the history of house mm-hmm. and you'll have people who have kept a record, you know, and sometimes there has been some appropriation of that by other people, but there is a record. Mm-hmm. And so you start thinking, is this something important to tell young people?
Right.
It's like even Afro-Cuban movement, it comes from prayer.
Yeah.
Is it important to share? Yeah, maybe, because now you understand the roots of certain types
yes.
of movement.
Yeah.
You know, you're not just doing a move and you don't know, just like ballet.
Yeah. Now, some people have used this as a reason to rail against fusion and said, oh, fusion's cultural appropriation. And I don't feel that way. No. I think that, you know, art, the purpose of art is to, you know, move with the times.
Yeah.
And yes, we should acknowledge the history, and it's okay. I think part of also, you know, I grew up, you've met my mother.
Yeah.
You and she got on like a house of fire. And my mother, she grew up in Rome, and she's was a language teacher for most of her professional life, or a translator. She had an international life like yours. My mom's multilingual like you are. And she was always excited about going new places and learning new things and learning more about other cultures. And that was what I was raised with, this sort of global outlook, which is very much about learning about other cultures and being inquisitive and enjoying that and having that exchange, you know? And I feel like I'm going to, here we go, hot take again from Bianca. This is part of why I'm an old school class kind of leftist in my personal politics, because I was raised with that outlook. And I think the problem with American wokeism right now is that it's extremely imperialist. The American idea of what is politically correct is what we insist everybody else has to go by. And our language, what we decide the terminology is, that's what everyone has to use. And what we decide is the hierarchy of social justice, that's what it is. And I see it as being extremely divisive, because we had a moment where we talked about, you know, there's opportunities when you look at the history of street dance, whether it be salsa, whether it be what's been happening with breakdance and hip hop right now. It's an equalizer that brings people together. The place where you see it, and people of different cultures, different religions, different skin colors, what unites them? Usually class.
Oh, it is true. It is really true.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's the thing that, you know, like, you know, here I get all conspiratorial. That's what the corporations don't want us talking about, because, right, like, there's a lot more people in the world who don't have money than people who have money.
So maybe, I mean, to your point, maybe the question is not just cultural appropriation or who should be teaching, because I think you're right. I mean, again, as humans, just humans, but, you know, biologically, we have the right to move. How that evolves depends on other kinds of influences. And I could have been born in China, and my whole cultural outlook, regardless of what I look like, it would be Chinese, would be Taiwanese. I mean, this is how it is. And so somehow there's this, again, like you're saying, this kind of rigidity. And I think in the United States, not understanding that being tend to be monolingual. And the thing is that what you just said about the class issues is, should we be questioning the commodification of certain dances?
Yes, exactly. You know, and I don't think, you know, when it comes to the commodification of certain dance forms, the fact is there's a lot of artists who are just trying to make a living, and you don't get rich doing this. I can speak from personal experience.
Yeah.
but that is it exactly, the commodification of these things. And there's times where, you know, maybe you see a very wealthy, famous person, perhaps a celebrity or something like that, you know, not giving due diligence or honoring where something came from. And that's where it gets really problematic. And that's where you can say, okay, that's not right. You need to acknowledge your teachers. You need to acknowledge where this came from. You have to include people who grew up with this.
Yeah. Don't close the door. I mean, I think that's where I think the tension is fusion is fusion. But you know, I'll tell you like about one dance form that has evolved a street form is bachata. Bachata comes from the Dominican Republic, and there it's not unusual for people not to know where it comes from, or to understand that that's not the root of central. But you know, like there's a root to other forms of bachata, which now are like sensual, urban. You have Dominican style, but it's like an oxymoron to say Dominican bachata, because actually that's where it came from. It's like, you know, it's, I don't know.
All of this stuff is really fascinating. And I think the big thing is to just have curiosity. So that's, to me, that's what it is. Because you can't possibly know everything.
You can't know. And you can just say, and maybe part of it is that you have to do your own research, because you're not going to get it. And I know people roll their eyes when I say, look, let's talk a little bit about where this comes from. And I'm not opposed to fusion. I think that in order for societies to evolve, and when there's cultural mixing, you're going to have fusion. Just like you have people who come together from opposite parts of the world, they're a new being. They have a whole different perspective.
When that happens, we get people like you, and it's delicious.
Yeah, I mean, it's just different, and you can't deny it. I say choose,
right?
Because it's no longer choose. So if you've taken ballet, and if all of a sudden I use a technique in ballet and my salsa dance, okay, well, that's good.
Yes.
I think that it's this notion of change and remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we are part of two people that in a sense formed us biologically, and we're new.
Yeah.
We're a fusion.
Yeah.
We're a fusion. And where does it take us? We don't forget. Even maybe we might want to forget about some parts of our life, but we are now something new. It's just, but we still have, you know, a reverberation of something that's part of us. Yeah. And I think it's just being able to honor. And when people don't feel their contribution is honored, it's a loss.
It's a pain.
And it's an invisibility. And I think one film I saw, and if there's anybody who's interested, I encourage you to watch it. It's called Uprooted, and it's based on the history of jazz dance in America.
Mm.
And it's wonderful because they do talk a little bit about ballet. They do talk about how ballet all of a sudden interfaced with this kind of early form of African folk dance that became jazz, because even ballet, people are fighting whether do we want to do this strict form of dance or should we do something else like modern.
Yes,
you know, there's always
There's always a tension
because people are trying to figure out who does it belong to.
Right.
You know, when I started taking ballet, I started reading about ballet.
Yeah,
and ballet was actually for poor people.
Oh,
it was like you were performing for the rich.
Yeah.
You got rich and you got to take back, which is kind of the case now, ironically.
Yeah. It's gone through different phases. I mean, you know, in its roots, a court dance, but then eventually, poor girls became ballerinas.
Poor girls became ballerinas.
Yes.
Then, you know, the king decides, I want to dance.
It goes back and forth.
Yeah. So anytime you enter any form of art, do a little research. You don't have to go back to college and get a PhD, but just get curious, to your point. Get curious and just say, what else is there?
Right.
You know, I mean, even you study ballet and you don't, like I'm saying ballet, I'm not going to audition for any ballet companies, but I'm thinking, can I learn? Can I learn the vocabulary a little bit more? Can I understand, you know, why we would do this movement? Do I see things that came from ballet, or maybe something came? Ballet borrowed.
Yes.
You don't know.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's the thing. And it's like you said, it's, you don't have to know everything. It's maybe it's just being able to acknowledge there's a huge history here that I don't know.
Like,
you know, and maybe I don't even have time to learn, but I appreciate that it's out there.
Yeah. Like even in, so I did, you know, again, people who know me, this is like, maybe I'm going into my third year of ballet training and all of a sudden someone will say, oh, Bure came from the town of Bure.
Yeah.
You know, or there'll be a name and it's associated with another country.
Yes.
You're thinking that's the movement. I forgot what it was, but you start thinking there's always been a certain amount of fusion, especially when people start to move.
Well, it's because ballet happens in a moment in time. It's not like the Mona Lisa or a painting or a statue and it's here and it's solid and it's this thing. And if it's preserved in 100 years, it'll be the same, right? Ballet is like stepping in dance in general. It's a moment in time. It's an experience. It passes through. We can now, thanks to film, we can capture it and have a record of that moment. But you and I both know that just like seeing a picture of a sculpture isn't the same as going and seeing the sculpture in person, seeing the recording of the dance, you're going to get something out of it, but it's not going to be exactly the same.
That's right.
And so dance is ephemeral, and that's why it can't stay the same. And, you know, that doesn't mean I'm glad we have dance historians who work to preserve, and we do have Baroque dance companies that are trying to replicate, we have, 2,000-year-old dance in India that survived in certain temples. Remarkable, right? You know, Bharatanatyam and whatnot, you know, but there's always going to be, like you said, this tension. There's always going to be new forms, new blends. There's going to be people reinventing stuff that has just been forgotten,
yeah,
or that they didn't realize existed,
yeah,
because, you know, the human body's been around for millions of years. There ain't no movement under the sun that's totally new. We aren't able, you know, like, so in a way there's no quote unquote new dance movements,
right,
to be done,
right,
you know? And I think sometimes in what we call, you know, concert dance, you know, theater dance, people get too obsessed with that idea. Like, oh, you have to make something brand new. Like, it ain't going to happen. Like, there ain't nothing new in the world to do. There's going to be things that you stumble into that somebody else has done before, but can you bring something to that moment and to that place you're at right now? And that's where I love what you said. I think that's going to be the catchphrase for this episode, right? Change and remember.
It is about change and remember. And I think, like, when I think about ballet, it's beautiful to watch. There is an aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to describe this, but there's this pull, this push or pull to try to make things simpler. So in simplifying, do we eradicate? Do we discount? And I'm not saying that you don't, there's no room for criticism of any dance. But I think it's not because of the dance itself. Mm-hmm. I think it's the context of a society,
right,
and a culture in a time and space.
Yeah.
And there are some aesthetics.
Yeah.
It's like you see a marathon runner or a sprinter.
Mm-hmm.
And although you might have somebody that's really lanky and tall, you know, with genes, the ability to have slow twitch muscle, mm-hmm, learn how to do it, to sprint,
yeah,
it's probably not going to happen the same. So, like, I struggle with this around ballet because there is a particular body type that seems to fit. It's when we only say the only form of dance that should be elevated is ballet, because now a lot of people,
agreed,
can't.
Yeah.
And ballet is not just about whether you can join a company. It is, what else can it do for you and your,
yes,
body?
Yes.
What else can it do to inform?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same, like, when I took modern dance, I thought, wow, I can do some of these things because I'm stronger. It felt a little faster.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, you know, but that doesn't mean there's no room in ballet to include that.
Of course.
You know, or I think, like, sometimes I think that some of the things in ballet are so, not so much about a body type, that can be, you know, one conversation. I think I understand why that's happening, this kind of conformity, because of an aesthetic. But I think what could be really questioned is the gender stereotyping in that.
Well,
for jumps or for turns,
yeah,
like, only guys.
You know, that's coming. So the jumping's come along. There's certain schools of dance where they don't do as much jumping for, mm-hmm, the women. You know, I think that there's some physical limitations. Mm-hmm. But Christina used to, my teacher used to have her teacher used to tell her to go jump with the boys because she would catch so much air. And one of the challenges she faced in the ballet world was, everybody wanted the really bony look, and she was more on the more muscular, more athletic side. So there are body type issues, I think. You know, there are some things that biological men have an advantage,
yeah,
for when it comes to things like partnering or getting enough height for,
yes,
certain types of jumps that require multiple rotations.
Yeah.
And that is a bone structure thing. And again, you know, like, there's a spectrum among, you know, men and women in biology, even there, you know, so not all guys are built the same. Not,
right,
all women are built the same.
Right.
I do think, but I do think, like, there, and I've discussed this before, and, you know, but I think it's worth repeating, you know, the punishingly thin dancer, that was a Balanchine,
yeah,
desire. And we're only now, like, it's taken like 40 years, 50 years to start to break the cult of Balanchine. So if you look at dancers from like the 1940s and 50s, you'll see they're built more athletically,
yeah,
like you and I and Christina,
yes, yeah,
right? And then when he came in, he wanted, you know, he start, he was basically a proponent of eating disorders without saying it. I mean, that's what he was pushing. And so then it became like, when you want certain lines, you do kind of have to do like what the Rockettes do. Have to be within a certain range of height of one another and whatnot. You have to arrange things if you want them to all look uniform. And there's something really exciting about that, being in the audience and seeing that. But it's not the only way to do dance. It's not the only way to do ballet. Paul Taylor famously liked shorter, more athletic dancers. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, Christina, 5'1", more athletically built, could dance her ass off in ballet. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, there's photos of her. I remember watching her in the studio as I was a kid and seeing her demonstrate. And she was just breathtaking, a breathtaking ballet dancer. So even if we need uniformity within a company, we can still allow for some variation within, you know, you still have to be very highly athletic.
Yeah.
You know, ballet is one of the most challenging, complicated physical activities in the world, you know, so, you know, you're going to need a certain level of athleticism if you want to get past a certain level in ballet. Yeah. But that doesn't mean everybody has to, you know, you're right. You know, the body type thing, that is something we're just starting to make some progress on, breaking through that barrier. And I'm delighted to see it.
And maybe to your point, we have to take the arts in context of what's happening in the society, because I didn't even think about Balanchine, you know, who I'm just getting to know. Like, I didn't think about that. I'm thinking now, I'm getting curious, like, when, what else was happening in our society, right, as he was choosing this lanky look? Was it the same time as Twiggy was coming about? I'm just trying to think, wait, what else was influencing our society and what we thought was really good? Mm-hmm. And now we're going to this kind of, I almost think of it as an opposite thing, because now everybody's looking for thick, almost, I am ballet, but in certain forms of dance, like celebrate, like, you know, I'm thinking, diabetes, heart attack, like, it's so unhealthy.
Right. Or sometimes people getting plastic surgery.
Yes.
Yeah.
To change.
It's like, not good.
So it's, so we struggle. And back to a point that you made is, how does it relate to money, to imperialism, to having
consumerism,
of the complexity of the tension, the complexity of the diversity. It's like, can we simplify?
Which is, you know, going back to salsa, which is what we started with, used to be communities of
people dancing
together in their neighborhood, weeknights, weekends, whenever there was a celebration, because that's what you did.
Yeah. And even when it was famous in New York, people were becoming more complicated in their move, because they would be thinking of different things to do to start, like, kind of to excite the audience, because the music was getting exciting.
Yeah.
So if someone all of a sudden went back to the floor, it's like breakdance, went to the floor or did a split and came right back up, you know, it still then became, wow, that's what we have to aspire to do.
I'm having nostalgia for a moment of time, clearly, that birthed these types of social dances, because they were before things like television.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just figured it out. And you're right. Like, we didn't have social media, so people go, come outside, we're going to do bus stop. Yeah. What are we going to do? And, you know, we had a Soul Train line, and then you're trying to, like, outdo somebody else.
Yeah.
Battles. You'd have battles.
There is, as you can see, you and I could talk all day. We're going to have to do another episode with you. But because I'm like, oh, we could go on for the next hours. But the thing that I'm coming to right now, which is part of what I think people love about social dance and why it hooks them, we're living in a dangerous moment, because with the proliferation of social media, smartphones, internet, people have become intellectual and emotional consumers. So no, we're not inventing. We hand children an iPad and they passively take in entertainment. Whereas you can see all these forms of social dance, and in fact, dancing, period. If you go back to folk dance, right? Music, dance, it comes from a time where people were seeking to entertain themselves and entertain each other. And when that required all of us having to participate in this act of creation and being inventive. And what is going to happen in the future when we don't have that anymore and we just have people who are raised entirely on entertainment consumption?
Right. Absolutely. And not only that, being influenced to do something right? like better or like match it.
Right.
Now, like I'll go to the gym and I see young, I mean, this is not a put down, but just like what I'm noticing, everybody has their phone. They're not working out, but they're
taking pictures of themselves,
dressing room and posting. And I'm thinking, that's good. You know, you like yourself or you want to post, but it's almost as if trying to compare themselves to an ideal, not necessarily being influenced to go, wow, I'm going to go to the gym and see if I can develop. Like if I come to ballet class, I go, let's see if I can do a double pirouette.
Right.
Like it's not because I'm being influenced to like fit a like some mold. I'm thinking, can I do this? How might I change it?
Yeah.
You know, how might I incorporate it? And there's something that in a way it like dumbs down, it like waters down a person's experience because we don't have this this interaction about how are we going to be creative. It's just like, what do I look like? How do I look? What do I do? What am I doing? It's very interesting. It's almost like we raise a society to be really narcissistic and clueless.
Right.
Not curious.
Yeah.
And what does that do?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, what does that do to our ability to create?
And I think that's why when people do get hooked into dance, they get like, you know, this is not like it's a positive use of this word, like an addiction, right? Because it's this connection to their body and to this moment in time, and presumably a lot of times to other people.
You're watching, you're getting, I mean, it, like, so if I'm
a mentally human experience,
right? If I'm in class with someone who's really good, I go, or I'm watching, I go, okay, I gotta get like that. That's what I'm working through. I'm not like, you know, and it, you start kind of developing a different relationship with yourself. But the social media, there's so much that's false. I don't know how to, it's not because you're experiencing something in the moment. You're experiencing something that you don't know how it's been distorted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, totally. Am I taking this picture so I can look like some model I saw?
Yeah. And you're both using filters.
Yeah. And all that kind of weird stuff. Yeah. Like I go, wait.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Like I don't even want people to see me in the dressing room in the gym.
Right.
I mean, in fact, I want to wait till I can have something to show.
Right.
But it's funny. It's just different. I mean, those people who love social media.
It's not meant to be a judgment or a cruelty, but it is a question that we're having to face more and more in society right now and ask some questions about as we live through this, you know, industrial revolution. Yeah. Brenda, we're going to have you on again. Thank you so much. You are amazing. I always love having you in class.
I love being part of Bianca Lilly Ballet. I really mean that from the bottom of my heart. And I love all the students I interact with. And I'm so appreciative of what I've learned. I mean it, Bianca.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. We're hugging. We're hugging.
Everybody should be taking ballet.
Thank you for joining us. We'll catch you next time.
Much for listening to Yoga Podcast created in 2018. Did you know that you can listen to hundreds of free audio yoga classes dedicated to meditation, mindfulness practices, and of course, asana, as well as tons of amazing information for your personal and sacred practice on and off of the mat? Check out today's show notes for a link to my website, lovebreezybreeyoga.com. You will also find a link to iloveyogatherapy.org, a new online resource center for yoga therapy and somatic healing practices and techniques. You will find a ton of information, videos and articles and case studies if you are interested in learning more about yoga therapy and Ayurvedic practices. Thank you so much for listening. Go in peace. Namaste.